Welcome to the Book Show. Novelist Paul Yoon has earned acclaim for fiction that examines lives shaped by war, exile, and resilience. His new novel, Etna, tells an unforgettable story through the eyes of a combat-trained dog who leaves the soldiers he served alongside to undertake an odyssey back to the place he once called home. Paul Yoon joins us next on The Book Show. Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Paul Yoon has built a distinctive body of work across novels and short story collections, including Snow Hunters, Run Me to Earth, and the Story Prize-winning The Hive and The Honey. His latest novel, Etna, offers perhaps his most unusual narrator, a former military dog making a perilous journey across a shattered, unnamed country after the fighting has ended. As Etna searches for the home he barely remembers, he encounters survivors, both human and animal, struggling to rebuild their lives. Again, the name of the new book is Etna, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Paul Yoon to this week's book show. Paul, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Joe. I'm so happy to be here.
Give us a sense of how this particular volume came about. And I say that because it just seems like there would be a personal aspect to it.
Yeah, 100%. The short, easy answer is that I fell in love with a dog. I've never had a dog before in my life. He's 12 now. His name is Oscar. My wife and I rescued him when he was about 3 months old. So he's been a part of my life for about 12 years. And part of it was just simply, I, and a lot of your listeners could probably relate to this, you know, for those who have pets and animals in their lives, you speak to them, right? But for me, I've never spoken to him out loud, you know, beside commands. But something that I've always done for the past 12 years is sort of imagine his voice and what he might sound like. And we would sort of be having imaginary conversations in my head. And so the book started where I was essentially just imagining a kind of conversation that Oscar and I were having, but I was sort of in his voice, right? And so the opening pages is sort of my imagining what Oscar might sound like. And it kind of evolved from there.
That idea of what he would sound like seems to be influenced by the situation, of course, which in this case is coming out of war.
Absolutely. You know, Oscar is not Etna. Oscar is a lovely, spoiled, lazy dog at times who likes to, you know, lounge and sleep beside me and go for hikes. And that's not the world that I created. In the polar opposite, actually, we are entering a novel that has in a fictional country where they've just survived a devastating war. And this ex-military dog wakes up one day after the war and has this deep, deep, powerful urge to find his way back home, where he was born on the coast, and so begins a kind of odyssey where he's trying to get back home through this ravaged landscape. I think that's sort of where the imagination and the fiction came in. But it's also stuff that I've been writing about for many years now. So I think it was sort of that, you know, where those two intersect, the things that I've been writing about, but also imagining the canine voice as well.
Want to get back to the canine voice, but as you say, yeah. what you've written about and so much of this story about returning home and what home is and where is it?
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of it is, you know, probably growing up and hearing, I have, you know, a family history where my father's side of the family were refugees during the Korean War. And so, you know, I grew up with these very formative stories and, you know, the kind of themes that I've been sort of tackling and wrestling with for a long time. A lot of it is that. I also think that, you know, home is something that I've just been kind of thinking about a lot. My wife and I, we've been itinerant. We've been traveling, or not traveling, but sort of, it was hard for us to always settle, you know, and find a place. And I've been kind of, you know, wrestling with that too. Like what sort of eventual fatigue of that and wanting to find a place in a community where we feel we both belong.
I feel about Aetna the way I feel about dogs in general. There's just such an incredible strong character and moral code, a beauty to their being that you represent so lovingly and beautifully in the novel. And does that come from, I mean, obviously it comes from a dog lover, but it also comes from what we know about dogs, right?
Absolutely. And their loyalty and their sort of, you know, their beautiful ability to never judge, right? I'll come home and he's always there with open arms, so to speak, and just full of love. And that doesn't change every day. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Joe. I think part of creating this character was, how do I honor that character and that sense of just loyalty and optimism and faith?
As the dog is communicating, as Aetna is communicating to other dogs, you realize that there are personality differences. You realize, which we all know, that dogs are different, and as people are, and there are those personalities. And yet there's still that innate character that is present.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think despite all the animals' differences, the differences in all the animals that he meets along the way, I think there's a kind of bond formed among them because of that consistency, where there's a kind of community that are all trying to rebuild and survive and move forward. In that way, they're bonded.
Right, because much of the reason of why they behave how they behave is because of what they've been through.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's a question of this idea of, like, who's your pack, right?
Yeah.
In this sort of decimated landscape, in this world, this new, quote unquote, new world that you're trying to rebuild a life, who is your new family? Who's your pack? And I think that's sort of one of the being arts of this book, is trying to discover that pack of yours. We all need a pack, Joe.
We do. And we get away from that sometimes, don't we?
Yeah, I think we do, for sure. And I think, you know, as some, you know, on occasion we become sort of siloed or kind of in our own little heads and minds and worlds. I think we there are times where we forget about our communities and our neighbors. And I think it's important to kind of always sort of be there for each other.
And it brings to that what is a very dated clarification of man's best friend, of a dog, that the reason it seems that they are human's best friend is because we need that pack, and so do they.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think an example of where it's not just human to human, like our communities and our family and our pack, right? Where we also have this sense, or at least I do, you know, of this responsibility to also be mindful of kind of our environment and the animals around us and all of that, right? In that we are connected.
Paul Yoon is our guest. The name of the new novel is Aetna. It is published by Scribner. When it comes to the language and the communication, did you set guidelines for yourself, rules for yourself of how that was going to work, of what the dog would do, what the dog would not do?
Yeah, so it was one of the first things, or one of the first challenges, I guess, of building this world and writing this story was, you know, what is communication like? And I think because at heart, it's a story of one dog trying to go back home. The baseline of that is that he's alone, you know, he's alone a lot. And yet I didn't want him to be alone. I wanted him to kind of interact with other fellow survivors. And so the one thing that I decided was that all animals are able to communicate with each other. And so every single animal can talk to every single animal. He encounters fellow dogs. He encounters, there's a comedic moment with a cat, another comedic moment with a donkey, and they can all talk to each other. And in that way, I think there's a kind of, again, just to go back to the idea of community, like there's a community formed among the animals. And that felt important to me to kind of showcase that. And less so with the humans. There's only one human he can actually talk to because there's this sort of power of telepathy, but there's no other human that he can actually converse with or have a conversation with. So that was very conscious on my mind too.
And this is the woman who ultimately gets him to join in on the war, right?
Yeah. There's a character named Sujin, who's a military doctor, and then she essentially, quote unquote, recruits him when he's a young pup. And she's able to converse telepathically with certain dogs. She has that kind of power, so to speak. And again, there's a bond formed there because of that, and because he also meets her when he's very young.
And that has a lot to do with it, the fact that he is young. He is a puppy, but he is told that he's going to have to work hard and is going to be responsible for saving a lot of lives.
Yeah. He's going to work very hard. He's going to save a lot of lives. That's what she tells him at the beginning. And he's so young. He has no idea what's going on. He's just been taken from the farm where he was born. And yet in that moment, in his disorientation and fear, I think a path is laid out for him, almost sort of like a destiny, right? And one that he ends up fulfilling.
You talk about the other human is Jason. And
yeah.
So I struggle with this many times of how I like the word companion. I'm not even real sure about pet or when they talk about dog ownership, or I don't like any of that, of those words.
But
I assume you had to struggle with that too, of just kind of describing a relationship of who's running the show at any given time and how they get along.
Oh, 100%. And I think, you know, the word handler sort of sticks in your mouth too, right? Like,
right.
Technically, Jason is Edna's handler, because a lot of that is in the past. I don't focus a lot on Jason, but in the moments I do, my hope is that what you potently feel is that they are willing to give their lives for each other, where there's actually, like, they are on, in some ways, equal ground, and that they have become a bonded unit as the war rages.
When the war is raging, this is a dog that, yes, is saving lives, but is also killing as well.
Absolutely. And that's the complexity of it, is that is Edna a hero? Is he a warrior? What is he? Who is he? He was taken when he was so young, trained for this without choice, and grew into this incredible soldier. And I think he sort of wrestles with that too, this sense of identity, like, who am I, right?
And he's also looking at the humans around him who are also killing and being killed.
Yes.
And grappling with what hopefully most of us realize of the senselessness of war and conflict.
Yeah. And my hope was, you know, seeing it through a non-human perspective amplifies that senselessness just a little bit more.
So talk about that amplification. What do you think we see and we learn about war from the perspective of Edna, or a dog's perspective?
Well, my hope is that it sort of, if one thing that I hope to achieve was if us humans, and it's beautiful that we're sort of at the center of the stage, right? But if I was able to push us humans just a little bit to the side of the stage and bring in other things in this world, I felt like I was able to pay attention to other things in this world just a little bit more, whether that's the environment, whether that's other animals. So part of it was just redirecting focus on things that are not necessarily at the center of the stage of our lives. I think also there's this one moment where he's taking care of a very, very old dog early on in the journey, and the dog sort of muses or asks him, he's worried that there's no longer any place for dogs in this world after it's been ravaged. And Edna responds by saying, there is no other place than this one. This is the place we've been given. And I think about that a lot, or I thought about that a lot as I wrote the book and as he journeys back home, this idea of he was not given a choice. Like, this is the world that he is experiencing, surviving, and needs to kind of rebuild a life in, and there's no other place. And so you sort of have to, or Edna has to, navigate that.
How did you come to the name Edna?
Edna is a volcano in Sicily, and one sort of thing I was interested in this book is that all of the war dogs, or all of the dogs that this doctor encounters, who recruits the dogs, quote unquote, all have names named after volcanoes. So there's a Fuji in there, there's a Semeru in there, and Etna is our protagonist. And that's sort of how the name came to me. I think also partly just on a personal note, I spent some time in Sicily. And so I think I was sort of, you know, haunted by that sort of, you know, the mythic place of that island and also the volcano.
Well, it gives an importance to the name. I think that struck me too. I mean, my dog is named after whiskey. So,
fantastic.
Tully for Tullamore. So I don't know where Oscar came from. Where did Oscar come from?
That came from nowhere. It just the first name that popped into my head, and it's so random. I wish I had a better story than that. Maybe that's why I wanted to name Etna. There is more significance said.
But there is significance in that, in Etna, and the other dogs, and the other characters in the novel that does play a part in giving us an idea of their character and how far they're willing to go.
Yeah, and I also think that I was interested in sort of, at least for me, when you think of, you know, something like a volcano, and the volcanoes of this world, they feel so historic and part of history and sort of have existed, right? Whether they're dormant or active, they've been there forever, and it feels like. And that's long sense of history was something that I was kind of interested in while juggling this book.
Were you interested in other novels that had been narrated by animals?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And this book is particularly inspired by a novel called King, written by John Berger. And that book came out many years ago, but it was very formative to me. For me, I read it when in my early 20s. That's a book about a dog who's navigating an unhomed community in a fictional city and takes place in about 24 hours. So, you know, that book had meant a great deal to me, but I think, you know, obviously I grew up reading Jack London, or even the films I watched when I was younger, right? Beethoven, you know, all that stuff. It just sort of, I think it all had a huge effect on sort of how I think about animals, but also just like animals in stories that I love, right?
Etna, we should mention, is a shepherd mix and just about a year old when brought in, as you say, brought into this. And I am interested of how important that is. I mean, for the purposes of this, of having a bomb sniffing dog, that it obviously makes sense to have a shepherd mix. But I guess what I'm trying to ask about is the importance of breed when you're telling a story like this. I mean, this is consistent with what the dog is doing, but not really about how dogs react to humans and other dogs.
Yeah, and I think something that I found interesting while working on this was, say, like the doctor Sujin is very well aware of the breed of Etna as a shepherd mix, but as he gets older and the book spans, you know, on his journey, he's about five or six, so he's a lot older. But he, by then, is in some ways unaware of what that means. Like what is he? He's not entirely sure. He doesn't know, like his brain doesn't work that way. I'm a shepherd mix, you know? And so he doesn't think that way. And so I found that really interesting where, again, the sense of kind of an identity there is different. His identity is different than the ones like humans sort of put on him.
Paul Yoon is our guest. The new novel is Etna. It is out from Scribner. I was struck by the use of Etna's senses, of those senses, particularly smell, because of seeing someone who has been wounded or killed, but much different that comes to Etna through smell and through smelling them and looking at various parts of their body, which we would not do as humans probably.
Yeah, 100%.
And yet what they learn from that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, part of it, I think, was again, not to keep talking about my own dog, but, you know.
Oh, go ahead.
But I just, you know, something that's seared into my brain is every time I come back home, you know, and Oscar rushes me, it's the nose that touches my shins, that kind of moves around to the back of my knees, to my hands, right? And so it's scent first. And so I think I was thinking a lot about that. And how do I create a world where it's scent first, while also, of course, giving room for the reader to kind of imagine the world too. And there's a scene where Edna encounters a dead body and is sort of sniffing it, right? And smelling it. And I think what you're referring to, Joe, where it's always going to be like for Edna, like the smells coming off the body,
right?
Rather than the visual component.
Right. Of seeing someone down in a pool of blood is that's different. I mean, that's sight. But obviously smelling that and going to the wrist and going from to the throat and then realizing that being the identification as to what happened.
Yeah. And also I think not just sort of focusing on the kind of violence of it and the physicality of it, but also this idea that through smell, can you unearth layers of history and more than just what's kind of on the surface of the body, right? So if he encounters a dead body, it's not just the smell of that death or violence or the blood, but it's also the layers and the years of what this person has gone through and the world, and or as in the environment, that's sort of where this person is. And to me, it was important to sort of capture all of that.
You mentioned about the older dog and the relationship that Edna has with the older dog.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have an older dog, and of watching the dog mature, and which is a beautiful thing to watch, but also can be heartbreaking. Yeah, and
absolutely,
and that's all part of it, isn't it?
Absolutely, 100% part of it. And I think about as Oscar gets, you know, he's 12 now, going on 3. But I think about, you know, there's no eloquent way of saying it, but I think about, you know, days that are, you know, his end or the days when he's no longer in my life. I think about that every day. And I think part of the reason why I started this book or wrote it when I did is I could only have written it when Oscar's older and I'm thinking a lot about all these things. In the way that I think the dogs in this book are also thinking about their mortality as well.
There's a beautiful picture of you and your dog in the New York Times, and
that was published this weekend. Yeah,
it's just beautiful, and that's I assume a lab mix. Is that?
Yeah, he's a lab mix. We're not sure what he's a mix of, but he's a lab mix of some kind. Yeah.
And just a beautiful, beautiful dog and a big dog. I love big dogs. There's something about having I have nothing against smaller dogs. I don't want to have anything against any dog, but my goodness, having a big lumbering, and I'm partial to labs. It is a great companion.
It's a great companion, and the sheer, it's the physicality of that being beside you. He also, you know, maybe too much information, but sleeps in bed with us. You know, I love it. I love this soft furred beast beside me as I fall asleep, and I'm sort of, you know, I've got my hand on him and can feel his breathing. It's one of the happiest sort of moments in the day for me.
I this is a question that my wife and I have when our dog is in bed, where you just say, well, like, we're doing the best we can for this dog, right? We've done the best we can for this dog.
Yeah,
and look at them. And then you think, well, they're doing the best they can for us too.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And to sort of have that existence together and that bond. And I think it's really beautiful, and it really makes my day every day.
It's a beautiful ending. I won't get into it, but it's a beautiful ending to...
Yeah, we can't give too much away.
No, but it's a beautiful ending, and I would assume that was a challenge to get to that point.
I think it was absolutely a challenge. I think the one thing that I really, really wanted was I wanted Edna to have a good ending. I think I'll just leave it at that. And after what he endures and goes through and sees, there's just some really dark moments in the book. And I think it was a challenge for me at times, I think emotionally, psychologically, to sort of remember that there is light at the end of the tunnel. But I was just so determined to bring him there, and to give him that bit of light. So yeah, absolutely.
I referred to this book when I was writing about it the other day that is more of a collection of perfect sentences. Talk a little bit about the style of which you chose to write this.
Yeah, I mean, part of it was trying to translate, you know, a non-human collection of thoughts into words and sentences. And so one thing I did was break up the paragraphs so that there's a lot of small paragraphs that almost, I dare not say poems, because, you know, in case there are actual poets listening in on this, but you know, there was a kind of, I wanted a lot of space between sentences. I wanted that patience, and I wanted that space. And hopefully the effect of that is that the reader lingers on the sentences just a little bit more and experiences those senses that the dog is experiencing.
Well, I was going to say that the way it's written, it allows you to experience. It's a very much in real time and a moment by moment that is quite halting. It's very grabbing.
Yeah, no, thank you, Joe. And that was sort of the challenge, was, of course, it's a pretty slim book, and I wanted it to move very quickly. There's an engine here that's revving. The dog is, you know, it's moving, going home, and it won't stop. And yet, within that journey, I wanted those moments where he'll look at the reflection of the moon in a puddle. And I want the reader to look at that reflection of the moon in the puddle and have that sort of last just a little bit longer than perhaps one might be used to during the reading experience.
And to do that in such a, for want of a better term, a snippet is just such a beautiful thing. And you do it just gorgeously.
Well, thank you. That really means a lot, because it was something that I was, you know, very much thinking about, and it was a challenge, but I really wanted the reader to experience that. Yeah.
It's such a beautiful novel. It is Etna. It is incredible. It goes with so much of your work is just amazing. And right now it's my favorite, Paul.
That means a lot to me. It means a lot to me.
The name of the book is Etna, a novel. It's published by Scribner. Paul Yoon, what a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much, and congratulations on the beautiful work.
Oh, thank you. It's such an honor to be here, Joe. Thanks for all that you do.
Paul Yoon is the author of the new novel, Etna. It is published by Scribner. Thanks to our producer, Madeline Reynolds. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on National Productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at WAMC.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.